20 years ago, if I told you that I can 3D print your teeth in 25 minutes, that is better than your God-given one, or if the one that you're born with, you would have said, this is not real. This is science fiction, but it's happening right now.
Welcome to the Gary Scott Thomas Show. Here's what we know. The podcast with unexpected conversations. Listen each week as we engage in unscripted conversations where we'll be just as surprised as you will be with where the dialogue goes. So join us each week and be privy to the captivating conversations that are sure to ensue. Here's your host, Gary Scott Thomas.
Welcome to Here's What We Know, the podcast of unexpected conversations. And there's going to be a lot of unexpected things going on right here, because I'm excited to talk to this young man who may be, if you're not the busiest person I've ever met in my life, you're in the top five. And I can't think of four other people who are busier than you. He is the founder and CEO of SprintRay, and he also has the time to record his own podcast, which I found disturbingly fun to watch, right? You're not supposed to be good at every damn thing you do, Amir. It's Amir Mansouri. Amir, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. Thank you. Great to be here.
Can I just start off right off the bat? Let's just say it, because we've got a lot of things to cover. And as you'll find out, I have questions. I have so many questions. Let's start off right off that and tell everybody exactly what is SprintRay. What do you guys do? What is it? What's the purpose?
Yeah. So we're a digital dentistry company. That's how we always introduce ourselves to people who are not familiar with dentistry. What we do is we help doctors to digitize the patient, then do treatment planning, which is whatever you need in your mouth. And then using digital technology, 3D print them in the office right when they need it. This is in a way, a modern day dental lab that is sitting in a form of a device and some AI in dental practices.
You're doing science fiction is what you're doing. What? 20 years ago, this was science fiction.
That's the sentence I use on the stage always, that 20 years ago, if I told you that I can 3D print your teeth in 25 minutes, that is better than your God-given one, or if the one that you're born with, you would have said, this is not real. This is science fiction. But it's happening right now, every single day in our community with doctors, that patients walk in, 25 years, no teeth. They get four implants on the top, four implants on the lower. 30 minutes, teeth are printed, they walk out of the office with teeth again. It's brilliant what we can do in dentistry today with modern dentist technology to help patients, and we're very excited about it.
You should be. I mean, you just kind of glossed over it, but I want to pull down and hold off everybody, because I have had, as one dentist told me years ago, Amir, you have the best looking bad teeth I've ever seen. And when I want to scare my children into making sure that they brush and floss, I open my mouth and go, hey, you want to hear the story behind all of these, right? What you just said is that they can go in and in no time at all, because I remember the old days, if you'd get a crown and stuff, it was two or three visits, and it could last up to a 2-week period of, you know, and you just simply said within an hour in some cases, right?
That is the efficiency that we believe in this time and age, that everyone is in a hurry. People don't have time. People are busy. Expecting people to go back twice, three times for a dental appointment is just not reasonable. Even I wouldn't do it myself. Like, I don't have time to go to dentist multiple visits. And now with the help of AI technology and digital fabrication, 3D printing, we're able to 3D print your teeth in 10 minutes. It's not even 1 hour. The print process is 10 minutes. The rest of that 50 minutes goes into planning your case, designing your crown, post-processing a little bit. And it's a reality that is happening today.
I was telling my wife about this, right? That I was trying to like say, okay, here's the thought process behind that. And my wife's like you. She's in the tech industry, very busy. And she's like, I want that. I don't have time for a couple of visits. I don't have time for hours. I've got meetings, you know, 8 hours a day. That's what I want.
Yeah, very true. Once you enter this digital world of dentistry as a patient, it's almost impossible to switch doctors. Like, Let me tell you this. Just the part of digitizing your teeth. This is what every one of us need, a bio, almost digital bio copy of our teeth as we age. This is something that you want every year, a digital scanning of your teeth, because you're going to lose a tooth here and there. When they make it, they want to remake your own. You don't want something to be designed with AI. It's a bio copy of your own teeth. So the entry to this digital dentistry world is a scanning technology. I mean, I'm sure you know it, Gary. You go to your old school dentist, they put a tray in your mouth, you bite on that piece of impression. That's a no-no, red flag. You got to walk out, go to a dentist who is digital. They use digital technology to digitize your teeth. And then after that, the whole open, the world of AI and as well as technology opens up. You can do so many things with those digital data.
You know, one of the things... Yeah, and one of the things I loved, and this was one of the things I saw you say in one of your keynote speeches, is that if you lose an eye, it's gone. The beautiful thing about the teeth and how important they are is it's something that can be replaced. And as you were saying, with an even harder substance than what you were born with.
This is something we take for granted, but it's a reality. People lose an arm, it's gone. It's never going to be better than what you were born with. If you lose an eye, it's gone. But with the advancements of biomaterials, both on the implant side and also on the crown, which is prosthetics that comes on top of that crown, we take it for granted. But again, if you think about it, this is, we're giving someone else another 20, 30 years worth of life to that teeth. And it's just possible with the advancement of biomaterial as well as digital technology.
Can you? I can't imagine, because it, again, you said it exactly right. It's one of those things we so take for granted. Now, I grew up in a different generation from you, and I was talking to a buddy of mine earlier today, and I said that we are so much more cognizant of how valuable our teeth are. When I was growing up, you know what I saw commercials for all the time? Polydent and denture cream.
Right.
Right? They were everywhere. You never see those anymore, because dentist and the medical establishment has said, no, it's important to keep your teeth. And it is so, so amazingly valuable for your entire health. I can't imagine what it's like for someone who hasn't been able to eat anything other than tremendously soft food. How game-changing and life-changing that is.
Yeah, very true. And just, I mean, we're talking about treating your teeth after you lose them for whatever reason. Just the whole preventative aspect of going to a dentist that is digital and put the preventative care. We can 3D print night guards today. It's in another 30 minutes. And those night guards, you know, everyone grind teeth. Every one of us, we have a stress. It's a fast-paced world. We have our own issues and challenges in life. Mm-hmm. We all grind our teeth, no matter what income class you are at. That happens. And the ability, and I mean, grinding teeth is the beginning of it, and then it goes to gum recession. That's the next thing that happens, and it goes into the whole downward spiral of losing a lot of your health in the oral cavity. So that's one aspect of it, which is on the preventative. And I believe dentistry has been far more advanced, and things we can do today to prevent a decay, to prevent things from happening, or doing minor treatment to prevent to become a total loss of your teeth. It's phenomenal. Like you don't see it in heart disease that much, or in heart field, or in diabetes. The preventative is harder, but in teeth, in reality, with a few checkups, you can prevent a lot of damages. And then once that damage is done, you're right. The quality of life drastically drops. You go from biting on one apple to eating good food, good nutrition, to not enjoying eating and not getting the nutrition you want. The patients that are getting their teeth back with a treatment we call full arch, which is, as I said, these are modern day denture. Those old school denture of the whole thing get replaced. It's replaced with this implant supported. And the difference is you get, let me take one step back. In regular dentures, you have about 20% of your biting power of the original teeth that you have. Let's say these piece of plastics, big, replaceable, take it out. You'll have about 15 to 20% of biting power. But when you go to this new age, the modern ones, which are implant supported using 3D printing and milling technology that are fabricated, you have up to 85% of your original teeth back. Wow. Then that quality of life of being able, the comments we get is, I'm able to bite on a piece of apple now. And that is something powerful. And every time we hear it, it just gives us more energy to keep going and keep inventing in this field. That is so much game-changing, and we're excited and more passionate about bringing this technology more and more to people.
See, I love that, and I want to drill down on that using a devil term. but I also want to take the time. Can I just get a little bit of your story? Because I mean, it's fascinating. And I want everybody to know your background. I love how one of your buddies was describing you. He was introducing you, and he goes, "This guy's a genius." And you're like, playing it down. He goes, "No, he's really a genius." And I'm like, you know, none of my friends describe me that way. But that's just me. But what is the background on you? I mean, where did you come from? How did you get this? Where did you get this passion from?
Yeah, I mean, it's something. Again, our team are so nice to me. It's always a teamwork, and it takes a village to do something disruptive. It's never one person that can take all the credit. So this is what we have done has been a journey of a couple of hundred people from 2015 that we've been essentially pushing and being a disruptive in an industry to be able to do what we have done today. My story, I came to the United States to do my PhD. I'm born and raised in Iran. I did my undergrad in Iran. And then, you know, the third world country, grew up with different rights, limitations, and privileges. And then at some point, I felt like I need to grow, and I was not afraid to get out of comfort zone. So I applied for University of Southern California for my PhD program, and that was 2012. Which I got admitted in this field of industrial engineering with a focus in 3D printing. So that's how I got into 3D printing aspects of the dental that we are right now. It was my PhD research. And we researched a lot. We researched different methods of 3D printing. One of the major projects that I was involved was a lunar construction with 3D printing. So we were given... The project was sponsored by NASA, and we were giving lunar simulates to 3D print structures on the surface of Moon and Mars. It was so exciting for me, just coming out. Imagine coming out of Iran, different vibe, being so close to this much advancements and this much disruptive technology. All you can do is just to take advantage of that, to really embrace yourself into this ecosystem of what is provided here in California. Again, another thing people take for granted is this ecosystem is so fertile that you can almost do anything you can dream. You can do it.
Isn't that amazing?
I was so...
It just takes somebody from outside for you to really do understand. Because as you said about dental, we take it for granted. We take these things for granted.
And it was the first course that I had it was a robotic course at USC. I remember the instructor was saying, "Well, Silicon Valley, so-and-so was invented. Apple was here. Google was here." I was like, "Wow, look at that. Where am I?" And those really moments that you decide to keep going, don't quit, keep going, do something disruptive. Don't just get out of college and to just go to a normal way that everyone else go. That's what I did. So PhD finished, and with my two other co-founders, we wanted to bring back then it was just 3D printing, the vision was to make high-resolution 3D printing more accessible. That's how we started the company. And dentistry was an accident. Like, we never planned to be in dentistry. It was something that you follow the path of least resistant. And it was an early customer of ours who bought one of our products to do the exact same thing. They wanted to use more and more of high-resolution 3D printing. And they told us that the devices are accurate, and we ended up in dentistry.
Wow. Because, I mean, that was my other question. I mean, where was the focus? Where was the passion? Was it, as you said, started off in robotics and then it became 3D printing? Was that the focus? And then I was wondering, or was dentistry the focus? And the way you answered that, it's amazing. It's almost like you followed where the evidence would lead in solving a crime.
Very true. And that's how I treated my life. Has been my philosophy, that this thing that you wake up one day and something is your passion, it's just for books and podcasts, maybe. You can turn anything into your passion. It's all about having a little bit of perseverance and taking pleasure into solving those problems and making progress and turn it into positive reinforcement. So to me, studying mechanical engineering was that. I never wanted to become a mechanical engineer. I just ended up in that and I ended up liking it because it was fun and we were doing consequential things. Doing a PhD was another thing. I never wanted to become a PhD in 3D printing. I ended up in that path and I ended up falling in love with it. Same thing with dentistry. When our customer said, this is good and you might want to use it in dentistry, we started to spend more and more time with them. And little by little, we're like, wait a minute, this is fun. We're making progress. People are liking us. And now dentistry, I went from 5, 6, 7 years ago knowing nothing from dentistry than just going to a dentist to now teeth are the most important thing in my life. Like I go to my relatives, to my uncle's house, I empty my pockets, I get teeth out. It's like that much I'm obsessed with teeth and aesthetic of it and performance of it and the ability to 3D printing a better one that people feel like I was born in a dental family. No, it just became a passion along the way.
Well, you sound like, you know, if you're pulling teeth out of your pocket, you better be in the dental industry or you're a serial killer. I mean, there's, you know, that's your two options.
That's very true. I went to see my uncle and I emptied my pocket. It was a piece of denture. And I was surprised. What is this? I said, Uncle, if you want it, it's been used twice, just twice. Not all we can wash it, disinfect it for you. And we're all laughing. Yeah, that's how much it is. Like in my house, everywhere you go, you find teeth that are printed. And I'm very close with our R&D. The background of being an engineer, the background of being a product mindset organization, and that direct link that I have personally with our product managers, with our engineers, just I'm constantly in the state of testing things, collecting feedback, spending time with our R&D, and that really drives our innovation engine.
I was today years old when I found out what a product manager was, right? And as a parent, I can tell you, here's my take on a product manager. You take marketing and you take engineering and you force them to get along and play nice with each other and share. Now, that is as a parent, as a CEO, what's your take on it?
I'm a little biased in this topic because I think we're living in an age that it's a product age. Like companies, you see it every day, companies that are winning, Tesla, Apple, Google, OpenAI, they're coming up with revolutionary products that solves big pains of their customers. And the only way to succeed in this time and age is not by increase your margin efficiencies and increase the operational efficiencies in your companies. You need all of those. Don't take me wrong. Mm-hmm. But companies with absolute obsession over product developments are the ones who are winning today. And we see it over and over and over. So for me, product manager or product management is very similar to what you said. Merging marketing and R&D, absolutely. And on top of that, I call them the parents of products, because products is not like you bring this kid to the world and good luck, I'm done with my job. No, you're on the hook all the way to the day you're alive. Because now you got to put him into elementary school, college, care about the manners, fund the college, put it out of there. What is he going to do? What kind of job is he going to get? She's going to get. It's product development is like that. Once you conceive the product idea to the point that you bring it to life, the job begins. You got to come up with the next one. Customers' expectations are super high in products. That's how it is. And today, I think in most companies, product managers play a very, very crucial role. And they make and break of today's companies, in my view. Like, look at OpenAI. Everything they're doing at this point is product management using their core technologies. Brilliant what they're doing.
is it more of a challenge? And I say this as I think we as a population, especially here in America, that we as a population are more versed in technology. And I'll give you this example. My mother's VCR always blinked 12. Right. Because she could not figure out how to set it and if the power went off or whatever. And it was just something she never learned how to do. Well, you can see 84-year-olds on TikTok now and understanding the concept of what they're trying to do. We're so much more versed in it that as someone, as you say, a product manager, when you're trying to create a product that solves a problem, it was easy when you were doing the wheel or coming up with a hammer, right? Well, now I got to imagine that's got to be a heck of a challenge.
I mean, people are more native digital today. That's
native
good.
Native digital. I like that term.
I mean, the newer generations are native digital. I mean, we had to go learn cell phones and computers later in life. But now kids, my friends, two-year-olds, scroll keyboards and chooses emojis that you're like, this kid is born with this. It's unbelievable how things are natural to them. That's the reality of it. That's Generation Go. These are more native digital. But I think it's also the underlying technology is much more available. And it's more like the more is being done, there's also more to do. And just in the world of software and applications, to me, sky is the limit. You can still keep going. We saw a shift from physical products into like hardware, what we call, to software and more like application software as a service that you see an app. Definitely there's a big disproportionate focus in those type of products rather than a wheel or a 3D printer in our view or physical gadgets, just because the world is more and more, in the software. But overall, I think this is a field that we're going to see much more innovations coming and much more different products being developed that baffles us how we didn't have this 5 years ago. Like, can you live without ChatGPT today? I can't imagine my life without it. Every single day I'm interacting with it in one way or another. It's just brilliant.
Well, I think it's such an interesting thought. I mean, 50 years from now, because listen, you were talking about the lunar stuff, right? The lunar and Mars and stuff like that. If we go there, the only way we can go there is with 3D printing, because we're going to have to take the materials that are there and create whatever we need, because we can't build a rocket big enough that would carry enough fuel, that would create enough thrust. See what I'm saying? It's just a never-ending thing unless you build the moon base, but we can always go about that. But you're going to have to be able to take the materials there. And I mean, 50 years from now, because you'll be alive, and you're going to your condo on Mars, I mean, it's going to be a really weird thing when you're sitting back and thinking about your role in this, because it's huge. It is, as someone said in one of your podcasts, it is an evolutionary technology. Not just revolutionary, it's evolutionary.
Yeah, very true. I remember when we were doing the NASA projects, the joke was you can't take concrete from Home Depot to Moon. You have to use whatever you have there, because the cost of transport of materials is just insanely, and it's not just feasible, it's just simple. So because of that, totally. We will be taking robots and then we start constructing things there using the material out there. And the technology right now is there. It's just a matter of making it more efficient and feasible and then essentially more investments in that front is needed.
Well, and to bring it back to Earth, I think the cool thing about this technology is that you can bring dentistry to the remotest of locations now. You know?
Yeah, very true. We were doing a mission trip in Jamaica and then we were looking at the pictures and I was just thinking that this denture that right now our team is delivering in the middle of Jamaica is the same quality that a patient gets in Beverly Hills. We're very close to Beverly Hills, so we use that as an example. And if you think about it, when you are creating a pretty equal opportunity or democracy, I don't want to use the word democratizing, it's very overused, but in a way it is that you're giving a possibility of people around the world to use the same level of care that they're using in the most affluent neighborhoods in the world. It was very fascinating to me. It was a moment that we just took a moment and thought about it and really felt good to be part of it and playing a very small role in making that happen. And we see it with our newer tech, the devices are super small and cool and tiny. And then you can just take it around anywhere in the middle of a jungle in a van and start printing teeth for people.
Isn't that crazy? You think about it, and because that's also the next part of evolution. It always has been. When we always remember the supercomputers used to be building size, right? And now,
and now
we hold this in our palm.
Yeah, very true.
You know, and the same thing with the printing technology. As you just said, you're around when to see some of the first big printers. They had to be ungainly at best, right?
Very true. Very expensive, $1 million to start, and then cost per material, per part, per super high, doing big, we call it size of a refrigerator. We can't even move it around. And this is something that is happening. It's just helping all of us to be happier, healthier, and it's just fun to be part of it.
Is that one of the things? Because we hear this term culture all the time, right? Especially here in Silicon Valley. And it is the most ubiquitous phrase there probably is here.
Yeah.
But it's for real, right? It's real. How would you describe the culture of SprintRay?
Culture is one of those words that really evolve in me, and just my definition of it as well as my understanding and then defining it in my own company. To me, we all started reading the Zappos book, the Delivering Happiness, and talk about those. I think to me, it comes down to how do you keep your team engaged and excited, because it's very, very hard. The job is very difficult. And passion is one thing, but what keeps people bonded together is that culture, because they have, I'm guaranteed, someone will pay them more money, more benefits, more free coffee and beers that we have in the fridge. None of those really keep people excited. What keep people excited is that shared vision, that really being excited about making a difference and the ability to bring something that is disruptive. And we've seen it over time. At the beginning, we went through the phase of, let's put our cultures on a wall. Let's go through a workshop and come up with a 12 different behaviors that we all believe in it. But a lot of them ended up being just meaningless. And then we went back to what we care, to build good products, which was own stuff, have an ownership of what you do, be excited about that. And it boiled down to two or three things that came very natural. And I think that's the glue. That's the glue that keep the team going and excited about whatever mission they have.
You know what I like? And like I said, I deep dove on your podcast, which I truly did enjoy. I learned so much, but I was amazed by how much fun you guys appear to be having, that you enjoy each other's company. And there's a good amount of, I don't want to say trash talk, but you know, just the joshing that happens. I can see how you guys would sit back and go, "Oh, you think that's good? I made this when I was 9." <You know?
laughs> That's the podcast experience has been very humbling to me. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of preparation to do a good job. And kudos to you, Gary, for doing this nonstop and delivering high quality content to your audience. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of work to grow it as well. So that was very humbling. Everyone thinks is easy, but man, it's very difficult. And what do you think? How long did it take you to build this whole podcast?
Oh, I've been doing this for years, right? And years. I started off in the first couple of years, I did it all on my own because I didn't want to have anybody, I didn't want to ask anybody to pay me for me learning.
Right.
Right? I was going to learn on my own my own things. And so I have a background in radio, and that helps talking to all these different people. But what I love about podcasting, I always did, you know, it's a different thing when you're talking to a country music star or Rick Springfield or Michael Bolton, which I, you know, I've done all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But when you get a chance to talk to somebody who's got such a different experience and who's got such a different background. And as you were saying, to see someone of your age, and I'm fascinated by how you, does it take more courage to start a company? Or is the real courage in not being afraid to fail? Because most companies fail.
Yeah. True? Yeah, very true. I mean, a little bit of both. Plus, I mean, especially at the beginning, ignorance is a bliss because you don't know what you're getting into. And if you, a lot of people now, they become more conservative. I think a little bit of that. And to me, failing, if you keep trying, it's not failing. That's the reality. And that's the philosophy we had at the beginning. We tried 5 markets, didn't work. And then we went into dentistry. And even dentistry, we've switched to supporting dental offices. So if you can sustain and survive a long-term trying is where people start to see success. That's how I look at my podcast too. As long as I can keep going without getting demotivated and bored.
As well, you should, because what happens is you take what starts off as a talking point. And I'll give you this, your co-founder, Hossein Basir.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I love the fact that you guys knew each other longer than you knew each other.
Very true.
And that was such a fun conversation. If you want to explain that, we can't just gloss over that. We have to tell people what happened there.
Sure. Yeah. We met for the first time in 2008 in Malaysia, because when I wanted to get out of Iran, it wasn't easy to come to US. You can imagine all the challenges. So I got into a master program in Malaysia. And the first night that I landed in Malaysia, I was very homesick. Very, not homesick, more like scared, because the reality of what did I do? I got out of my country by myself. And my cousin knew Hossein. And what we ended up he just took me to this guy, was his friend. So we hung out to just cheer me up. That was basically the beginning of me knowing him. Then I figured he's also Iranian. And we went to the same high school. We didn't know that when we met each other. Then we figured that out. That's how amazing the life is. And almost like 10 years after that, maybe 8-9 years after that, we started the company together. And that was brilliant to just think how life planned things, and you just got to keep going and keep doors open and keep the relationship going. And you never know what you do with someone after 7-8 years. That's how we started the company. And the day with the other co-founder, the other PhD, Jing, we decided to do it. I hung up the phone and called the other one. He was at the time in, you know, Rigid Ryobi Power Tools?
Yeah, sure you have it. Absolutely.
Yeah. He worked in the parent company. It was called, I think, don't remember the name. Just call him and say, hey, we're making 3D printers. Do you want to join and make it pretty? He was an industrial designer. And he said, yeah, he quit his job. I couldn't believe it. He just quit his job and said, I'm going to move to California. It was in South Carolina at the time. And he moved. We did the Kickstarter. And the day Kickstarter got funded, we wanted $100,000. We raised it in 2.5 hours. Then he put his resignation, hopped on his car, drove cross country to come to LA. And that's the rest is history.
Isn't that crazy that you were both going to USC? You know, you're Southern California, he's South Carolina.
Yes.
You know? Yes. And you talk about how life can put you together. The fact that you guys would have so many complementary skill sets. It's like, I don't know if you know about rock music, but the band Rush, right?
Yeah.
You have Geddy Lee and you have, I can't remember the guy's name, the guitarist. But the fact that two of the best musicians on the planet literally lived in the same small town. And found each other.
That's very true. You know? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, interesting. We have that's the universe planet. Whoever plans it, we take it. This is brilliant.
Amen. When you just sit back and you look at how many things have to fall together. And you know planetary science. I mean, you've done all this stuff. How many things had to happen in the billions of coincidences or things that had to happen for you and me to be here right now talking about 3D printing?
Yeah, very true. I think about this a lot of times. A lot of times when things get tough, you need to keep yourself motivated going. These are exactly the things that I think of that a lot of things went right that we're here. A lot of things, a lot of, as you said, fuzzy things just happened. So-and-so decision, you met that person there, that things are right now. You just got to take advantage of it and don't quit. Yeah, it's brilliant. And the other co-founder, Jing, he also, we went to PhD together with him. The other one was an industrial designer in South Carolina. Same as him, he graduated before us, before me. And when I started, he almost was out of USC. We're just coming here to hang out, coming to the lab to see what the new students are doing. And we just clicked. And that was, to me, was keep your eyes open and don't be scared of just talking about opportunities, because you never know. Like, if you never talk about it, people don't know that, hey, it would be fun to do this together. It would be nice to, this is my vision that I have. Like, if we didn't talk, just talk about, should we do it this? I'm thinking about doing a company like that. What do you think? If I just, that conversation, I remember it was a random dinner. Someone else invited us. If I didn't have that conversation back in 2013, when I met that gentleman, we're not here. We're not talking about in this podcast today.
Exactly right. I mean, when you sit back and look at all the things, I mean, all of us have that story that if we would have turned left instead of right, then who knows what happens, which leads me to my next question. As you, as the CEO, how do you approach decisions? You know, my wife works in the technology company, big, and what she does every day is just does hundreds of decisions. And so, like, when she's done working, you know what I do? Because I love her, she doesn't make any more decisions. I don't ask her what she wants to eat. I don't say, I mean, I'm making every decision there is to make because she's done. How do you approach decisions? Because as the company grows, and you guys are literally the market leader right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
You don't get to make any more small decisions. The only decisions they come to you with are the tough ones. How do you approach that?
Yeah, I mean, I put together the past 7-8 years of SprintRay. And SprintRay was my first job ever. And I started just as an engineer with my co-founders. And at the time, then the board told me, you got to be CEO. I was like, what? What does CEO even mean? It really grew into it over years. And it just boils down to exactly what you said. At this point, we're just there to make the tough decisions that no one else is willing to make. Mm-hmm. And every year, I think for me, is every year is it probably 3 or 4 decisions that everyone looks up to us. All right, make the call. And those are the toughest. And the more consequential they are, the more I take my time. And it's at the beginning, it used to drive my team crazy because it was either I was not making it when I was making the decision, I was changing my mind the next day. Then I learned to, you know what, take your time and then ask him how much more time we have. But decision making is the most important thing today in my life. And those decisions are the big ones come to us. And I just want to give you an example. Like, we're doing a big event in Miami in about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And this is where we're launching the product that is going to be another revolution to our mission. The big decision was, do we do it in April or we do it in October? And there's a big difference because, you know, in a 12-month, 4 quarters of the year, you want to launch products early so you can benefit from that product launch, marketing, the vibe, the buzz, the hype train for the rest of the year. But if you do it too early and you don't have products to ship, you almost lose that gap that no one buys products. No one buys mm-hmm. product. You're basically, if you go too early, you're jeopardizing 1 or 2 quarters of revenue. And everyone knows that you're coming with a product, no one buys. It's a dilemma. on one hand, you want to take care of the customers. You want to give them the latest and greatest. On the other hand, you got to keep going because a lot of people relies on, they have a sales team, you have a marketing team. They got to get paid, got to sell products. They don't want to not sell. Like one of the big decisions this year was, when do we launch it? And engineers want to buy more time. Sales and marketing want to do it earlier because they need that hype and buzz. It came down to me and we made that call. It's a, I think it's a combination of, to me, consulting with experts. I have a Rolodex of CEOs, friends, advisors, not consultants. There's different from very particular, not consultants. These are advisors, mentors, CEOs, friends. Just call them and ask their point of view. And then once you get enough point of view, then you can form your own. That's my process. Just ask experts who've been there, done that. Ask your team, hear your team out. Sometimes I ask my team, Matt or Jamie, if this was 100% your decision, what would have you done? And I do it this way and that way. Then you put everything together, and typically, usually we've done what I call net positive in good decision making. You can't be 100% of the time right. You do bad decisions and good decisions. As long as the sum of the good decisions are better than bad decisions, you survive and win. So.
Well, there's no such thing as 100%, you know, all the time. I mean, you look at Apple. I can remember a time when Apple was a pitied company. Right. That I had a friend who worked for one of their suppliers, and she got out of the business because she's like, oh my God, I have Apple, which was a death sentence, right? Because Apple was just dying because decisions. And the fact that I hope as you grow into your role, I think what you'll stop doing is once you make a decision, this is what I found after being, you know, 297 years old, is that once you make a decision, you live with it. You just go, whether it's wrong or right, I made the decision and I'm in. And you know, it's the old saying, wisdom is knowledge plus experience. Knowledge without experience is worthless. Experience without knowledge is worthless, right? So to both of those becomes wisdom. And you, every day, you've accrued more and more. I can tell when the beginning of your podcast and the ones I'll watch, you kept getting more experience. You kept getting more knowledge, and it turned into wisdom. And it's the same thing with your CEO journey. Is as you become more and more confident, you'll sit back and get everybody. You'll take everybody's things. But at some point you go, nah, I got it. I'm going to make the decision and I'm going to live with the decision because I had this vision and I'm going to step out and go. But it's wonderful that you had that because you have to wear so many hats. What was the hardest thing for you to learn or master? Not to say you have, but the thing that the company needed you to do and you've learned how to do it that you didn't think you would be able to, or maybe you had, let's use the word trepidations.
Right. That's a good question. One of the hardest thing, and every 2-3 years, I went through a different level of learning to survive in my job, basically, let's put it that way. The latest one I went through, because we went through this phase of early 20, 30 people, it was fun, everyone was friend. Then we went through a phase of growth that we went to 200 people. And if I get vulnerable here, I was scared to lead. Yeah, it was more like these guys are 30 years experience, 20 years experience. They know better than me. Who am I to even lead these guys? So the period of 2 years, I got comfortable to lead these guys. That was a big learning for me, to just having just the confidence to talk to them, to give them direction. And that didn't happen overnight. There was a lot of situations that I felt like, you know what? I know better than these guys. I know not just the work, they're more experienced than me, but my intuition is better. And every time that we decided to experiment with some of the stuff, they ended up that coming up with some of the early intuitions. So I learned to trust my intuitions more. And I think that phase that I went through, just the engineer transitioning into more the CEO role, then I brought a lot of experts, industry experts. There was a lot of intimidation at the beginning. That was a big thing for me to learn it. That was one big inflection point for me, for my role as CEO. The second one we got to a point probably after the 2021 market boom, the financial crash in the capital markets, the, I don't want to call it crash, but it become very hard in our industry to raise money. Mm-hmm. And all the big tech companies had a crash. Every company that was not profitable started to crash, run out of money, become impossible to raise. So I really had to force myself to become a good operator too. I was being recognized by an innovator, bring a technology, disruptive technology, burn the venture capital money, get customer traction. Anyone can do that. But to actually become a good operator, then now you can generate profit. You can sustain your business model. That was another thing that in the past 2 years, I went through a substantial amount of learning by just talking to my mentors, advisors, getting some help with the bringing different type of CFO. And I went through that. And probably the past 2 years for me was transitioning from the innovator into operator. That was another thing that I never thought I have to do it. I need to make sure my margins are healthy and I need to make sure the business is sustainable. And now, not just turning profit. This is not about turning profit. I remember I went to a company call and said, we proved that we can put 3D printers in dental offices. And we proved that our doctors love us. They love to 3D print, but we haven't proved the business can succeed. It's easy to pump investors' money into this and keep going. But if this business cannot stand on its own feet, we're not going to be in business in 2 years. At some point, the funding stops. And this is a time when it become almost impossible to raise right after the war in Ukraine. It was very tough. Like no one wanted to talk to you. Everyone was more conservative and fearful in the market. So that process took us about 2 years and we increased our margins a lot more. We stopped bleeding money from different directions. We made the business plan more sustainable and more essentially long-term, what is the word? More, it's just, it works now. The business plan works and we turn profit.
I love the word. I mean, it's sustainable. I love that you trust your instincts because as the outsider looking in, your instincts to go, hey, I'm going to leave Iran and I'm going to go do this on my own. And I, you know, we talked about all the things that had to happen, but it all started with your decision. It all started with you going, this is the path I'm going to take. And the Kickstarter and everything else, it started with your gumption. To go. And that's why I see where people are going. Yeah, man, I'll hook my wagon to your star. I'm all in. Let's see where that takes us. And I love how you use the word disruption earlier, right? Because as in the world of dentistry, as your KOL.
Right.
I learned that term.
You learned that from our,
Yeah.
Did Dr. you watch Oliveira. That episode?
I love Dr. Oliveira. He's a hoot.
Yeah, but he's a good.
As he says, dentists can be, some dentists can be described as proud to be delicate, right? Yes. That they are convinced, as all of us, that the way we do things are the most amazing things in the world because look at me, I'm amazing, right? And they don't want to change. And this is a completely new way of doing things. This is not just a little bit, as you were saying, putting the tray in your mouth with the, you know?
Sure.
That was a big deal. How do you approach those proud dentists who don't want to change? Because this is the future. It is. You know as well as I do, this is the future. 100% believe it.
There is a hard fact about dentistry that is a very, very conservative and a slow adopting industry. This is in the tech. This is a fact. And as much as we do marketing and education and do events and teach the industry about the new ways of doing things, still 50% of the market are using those goo that you got to buy. And let me ask you this. When do you think the first commercial 3D scanner that goes inside the mouth and works and is affordable came into market?
2021?
2005.
Holy moly.
So it's been almost 20 years and half of the market have not adopted this because exactly what Dr. Oliveira said. And besides the part that they're very proud, our doctors are successful in the way they practice dentistry. In a way, it's a you can't argue with someone who's successful. At the end of the day, what problem you're solving? I'm taking care of my patients. I offer what I believe to be the standard of care. My patients, the people who come to me are happy. People who don't like to come here are not going to come here. And there is, you cannot argue with that. So there is not that much argument. So what we chose was to really pivot into work with more digital savvy doctors or native digital ones, and work with the ones who are under pressure to change or to have a reason. So like in my drive to work, there are like 3-4 dental offices that I know there is no way these guys will adopt the tech that we're offering. We never, but although they're like a stone throw away, we never even bother to go knock their door. And so we get our leads and our prospects through channels that are qualified already. Either they have a digital technology that is a scanning and they make him a perfect candidate, or they are really in the market to get into that digital. Otherwise, when they don't have any reason to change, why would they change?
Well, it's all about the customer service now, right? I mean, that's what I'm looking for. Like I said, the moment I described this to my wife, her reaction instantaneously was, that's what I want. I want that. Right. I want them to work around my schedule, right? And places like dentistry and medicine is the last place where, no, you're required to work around their schedule, right? If you know, and the idea that I could go and have a crown put on or done or some kind of dental thing taken care of in, as you said, 10 minutes and take another 20 minutes to put all that on, that's all about my time. And that time becomes, that's truly valuable to me. It's truly valuable to my wife. That's why if you're a dentist or somebody who knows a dentist, click on the links on this episode, because that's what's going to catch my, anybody can give me Novocaine. Anybody can clean my teeth, but can you do it to where you make my time valuable and therefore make your time valuable too? You're spending less time with people sitting in a chair, goop in their mouth. And oh, by the way, you're turning that chair over quicker.
Very true. And I think they understand the pressure of social media and more awareness more than the turning the chair. A lot of the doctors are like that. And once you become aware that, you know what, I have to go to a dentist that at least digitizes my teeth. Again, you want to have the copy of your teeth 15 years ago. For whatever reason, you just want to print it, put it on your shelf. Biocopying it, 3D printing later is another reason. Once we educate the patients that, hey, like all of my family, friends, when they ask me, I tell them, do not go to old school dentists. I love them. Again, they're not our customers. This industry I'm very committed to. But it's for your own time saving, cost saving, having a digital record of your own teeth over years. These are all the reasons that you have to go. Then things like same-day dentistry, things like more preventative care, these are upside of working with a digital dentist that you will get that they work now around your schedule.
Well, and it's more accurate too, right? I mean, dentistry is the utmost in customization. And I love this term that you came up with, this complete oxymoron of mass customization. It's amazing. And again, it's a lot more intricate than the gloop that you get and the hard cast that they give you. This is down to the hundreds, I would think, right? Of like centimeters and measurements.
Very true. Yeah. It's just, in microns level accuracy, it's much more repeatable, predictable. And, what matters is you will have a crown. Like I saw it. There's a dental office in Burbank, good friend of mine. I visited him and he was showing me a patient that, listen, I made a biocopy of his own teeth because your teeth over time have their own natural wear. Mm-hmm. And if all of a sudden they put a crown there that is a different anatomy that your body's used to, you start to feel it. Every single day with your tongue, you're touching it. Mm-hmm. The ability to take it, almost photocopy of your own teeth, Xerox your own teeth, and then give to you something. Yeah, you don't miss this as a fake teeth in your mouth. This is a fabricated. That's something that the quality of life and continue without any disruption is something that unless you've been through it, you really don't appreciate it. And only with digital technology, you're able to provide patients with such a care.
What's a typical day like for you? Tomorrow. I know it's a Friday, but today you're already into it and you've got this weird time with me. So we're not going to count that. But what would be a typical day like tomorrow? I know you have people who help you try to figure out your stat thing, but like, what time do you get up? What do you get started?
I set my own schedules. I don't have assistants. So
You realize that, right, Amir? I mean, you realize that's coming. You can put that off for a little bit longer, but not much longer.
So actually tomorrow we're shooting a Cybertruck video with one of our newest technology. I actually brought it here with me. Just bring it in. This is a game-changing technology. You guys see it?
Look at that.
I'm going to turn it on. 1 second.
All right.
As this thing is booting. So we are at the time, hopefully you see it now.
Yeah, I can see it.
So beautiful. I'm hiding behind my tech. And funny, the reflection is, okay, there we go. So this is the next generation of dental 3D printers. And this is our latest and greatest technology. By the time we publish this podcast, probably we have announced it to the world. But we're talking, it's exclusive to your podcast, Gary. This is what we call the Nespresso of dental 3D printing, because for the longest time ever, since the 80s, that dental or 3D printing in general was invented, 3D printers were like a big giant coffee espresso machine that you got to put your own coffee, grind it, compact, put it there, put a filter, clean it after use. And that our customers found it very, very difficult to operate. And that was one of the reasons adoption has been slow. So we developed this technology. It's called Midas. You see the logo right here.
Yeah.
And we turned this open architecture 3D printing platforms into this single-use Nespresso style that they only produce crowns. And the cartridges are, these are our pods that go inside the machine like this. And once you load the digital model, you just press the button and this thing arms go down and little by little start producing your teeth in 10 minutes. It's a fascinating patented technology. After almost 35 years in the 3D printing in general, this is the first time that we're coming up with something that is so easy to use for our doctors to be able to produce parts and crowns and bridges, mostly restorative dentistry, which is crown and bridge and fillings. And we're very excited to launch it in the next few weeks. And we're getting to preview it to you.
It looks so cool. And it's also portable, right? I mean, so you're not locked into one room. If you need to move it around or you move offices, that's not anything you're having to think about. Right?
That's exactly the thing. It's portable. Then talk about the same access we talked about. You can take this in the back of your car, in the middle of a jungle, in the middle of nowhere. You can start delivering high quality dentistry, that the same quality that doctors in Beverly Hills are delivering. This is something that I keep reminding myself and the impact of that, that this is the same quality of ceramics, nano ceramics, composite science that you're able to deliver anywhere in the world. And tomorrow we're putting this in a Cybertruck. We're shooting a video for the YouTube as well as the whole, just to demonstrate the fact that how scalable as well as portable this technology is, that we're able to put it in the back of Cybertruck and start producing teeth. So that's not a typical day. You ask for a typical day. That's not a typical day, but that's what's happening tomorrow.
See, but I mean, that's just so much fun. And that's what I'm saying is you look like you're having fun. That's the thing I love about what's going on here is that from the moment I started deep diving into you, I was like, and this guy loves what he's doing, but in a different way, he's having fun doing it. I mean, you can see the rewards of it. I mean, you're doing stuff that are truly helping other humans. That's cool. But the fact that it's just so much joy involved in this.
Yeah, very true. I'm having the time of my life building this company and really delivering a better product to our community. And I know since day one that we gave them a product to deliver a better part to their patients, it was just inspiring till now. It never gets old. And so I appreciate you acknowledging that. That's that was interesting. That became a byproduct of doing the podcast, as well as the other YouTube videos. And a lot of times I'm just trying to capture a typical day of even going to see my dentist to get my teeth. Let's just record it. Let's use our own technology. And let's have fun with it, because the work is hard. It's competition from a market, from regulations, from a lot of economy. All of these factors are already tough. And if we don't make an excuse to have fun with it, then it just loses its culture. As you said, it loses its meaning. That's how I look at it. And that's how I try to do it with my team, with my product managers, the marketing team, the sales team.
So what do you do for fun? What do you do? What do you do if you have a free day or a free Saturday night or Friday night? What do you do for fun?
A lot of activities, just outdoor activities to keep my body moving. That's very essential in keeping myself energized to go through those days of tough business and company.
You run, huh?
I do, not the way I want to, but I've done 2 half marathons, and I'm trying to get better and better to do it in a good time. Right now, I'm just same philosophy. I just want to survive a half marathon. That's what I did, how I did the 2 half marathons. But running is good. Biking, I do that. I picked up learning tennis just as a challenge, and I'm enjoying it with my wife. We go there. Hiking, just doing things that are outdoor, keep the body moving, keep the calories burning. That's what I do. Traveling too, obviously, with my wife, we love to do that. Traveling has become very disruptive to our business, her business and my business. That's a little bummer aspect of it. By the time you're back and you adjust, you lose a lot of momentum. That's what I don't like. But outdoor is something that we love to do.
So I have to ask you this. What do you listen to when you run? Do you listen to anything, or you just get lost in your thoughts?
A lot of podcasts. Yeah, I think a lot of podcasts, educational, a lot of health, exercise, a lot of podcasts, and just overall the ability. Again, this, to me, it says someone is putting, like you, Gary, a lot of energy, a lot of time, dedicating your time to delivering a very curated, high quality value. The thing you can't, you should take advantage of it. That's how I see about podcasts. That they're passionate people who are truly passionate about that topic, and they're just bringing good guests and good information. So I like to take advantage of those. So that's what I do in my runs and biking and hiking. Just try to consume a lot of podcasts, and more than music, it's just podcasts and audiobooks.
Audio, that same thing I do, because I have to be distracted. The same thing, when my wife will ask me after a run, she goes, "How was your run?" And I'm like, "I did not die, therefore it was successful." I'm trying to survive my run, and I need somebody to distract me from how horrible it was.
Yeah, very true. That's why I don't like music, because every 5 minutes you feel it's been 5 minutes.
Well, music becomes a measurement of time, right?
Exactly.
I need to run 9 more songs. I need to run the other song. But if you're listening to a fascinating podcast or a great audiobook, man, I can continue to go that way.
Yeah, and you see a podcast is 1 hour, you're like, all right, I need a 1 hour run. When I finish this podcast, the run is over. That actually worked very, very well. I tried to do it in the actual marathon, half marathon. It became tough. I couldn't finish it. But I couldn't do podcasts in the half marathon.
Yeah, that's when you want to go audiobooks, because you want to hear the story, right?
Exactly. So you want to
get the story on with that in an audiobook. But with podcasts, that's why I only go 1 hour. You know, I mean, even though I've run a little bit over with you because I've had such a doggone good time. But I figure 1 hour is about all the time most of us have time to listen. Right?
Yeah.
That covers most of our day. And therefore, when we come back, if there's more to talk about, like I have more I want to talk to you about, then what I'll do is just reach out and say, can we do this again? Because you're fascinating to me. This whole journey. And I was like, I know the problem I'm going to have with this podcast is that I'm only going to scratch the surface of all the stuff I wanted to talk about. And I felt like I tried to get so much in because it was just so doggone interesting.
I appreciate it, Gary. Thank you so much. It's been fun. Hopefully you enjoyed it too.
I had a great time. I can't fake this. Can you tell how much fun I had?
When I do my podcast, the moment I have fun, I know this is going to be a good podcast. Hopefully you had fun because I had fun speaking with you.
I had a great time. It's fascinating. The story's fascinating. You being so transparent is fascinating. And like I said, your joy is contagious. And don't ever lose that. That is truly what makes you, your buddy's right. You're a genius, but you don't really see a lot of high IQ people who have the joy that you bring to every equation. And keep that. That's so cool.
Thank you, my friend. It means a lot. Appreciate that.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you love this episode, please subscribe, download a few more episodes, and please leave a review. Reviews really help us get this out to more people like you. Also, we'd love to hear what your favorite part was. Be sure to join us on social media to engage in even more unexpected conversations. Until next time.